stories because I knew I had to wait a month. I had to wait a month for the next issue to get there, so I would just ration them out. And by then, I think about six, we had a older cousin or whoever the guy was. He was about 18, come in and showed us how to masturbate. And boy, masturbation and those pictures went together really good, and with the fantasy. And all I knew is, as I was getting older, is that I wasn't like the other kids in school. Number one, I felt, like it says in the white book, very inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. I just didn't feel like other. I didn't have the confidence the other kids had. You know, what their outsides looked way different than what I felt on the inward. And the only thing I could identify at about that age, and I think it was 12 years old, that I said, I noticed they're starting to hold hands and just starting to kind of connect, is it's got to be this masturbation and this acting out stuff. So I made a decision for the first time in my life to never do it again. I thought, I'm done with it. And I meant it. And I really believed that that would be it. But what I didn't realize in over those 6 years as I grew, or seven, that the inside pain that was now requiring, you know, the only way to be free of it is to do it. As I stopped doing it, about a week went by, man, I started like, whoo, like I feeling like I need to act out. And I just said, well, I'm not going to do that. But second or third week, I broke down and acted out. And I was devastated because I had made a decision in my life. And for the first time, I realized I don't have control over this. It actually is controlling me. And I was going to start me a little clock here. And so it was quite a surprise for me to recognize that this thing is, and it's growing. I could feel it growing inside of me, requiring more. And I started acting out after that, just with all the neighborhood girls and whatever I could, and got older and started going to parties. And at about 13, I first time I ever tried drugs, I thought, honestly, that what struck me when I took that first dose is I thought, oh, I don't ever have to do this sexaholism stuff again. I'm free. Because I finally had something that like dulled that down. But after a year, I was a major drug addict, and a sexaholic. It never changed. We started doing all kinds of crimes to feed the drugs, started selling drugs, wasn't going to school. We had school counselors, and I went in that one time and she looked back. I think it was in the early 11th grade, and she said, oh my gosh, you're supposed to have 17 credits. You've only got three. And they're all in weightlifting. So I would be out in the street selling drugs, come in, hit the gym, and then leave again. And she says, you're not going to be able to graduate. And I had been arrested many times. This was about the fifth time for a major arrest that I had an intake officer that told me that because they're always going to decide, she had to decide whether she's going to try me as an adult. And she goes, Dennis, I don't think I can protect you anymore. And I said, well, I heard a friend of mine told me that the military has discipline, and I know that's what I'm missing. So I'm going to go down there. And she goes, well, let's see if that works. So I went down to recruiter, and the guy looked at me and he's like, oh, yeah, come on in. He's all happy. And he goes, well, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 16. He said, well, you can't go till you're 17. So I told him that I'll be back. So 3 days after my 17th birthday, I went back down there with my mom and dad's permission, and I signed up. And I went in the military, and I had always, about 6 years old, I was taken to church, and I felt the presence of God in that church. I felt loved and connected, and I always wanted to really be just connected with that, but I never really could. And I tried reading the Bible, I tried everything, but before I went, my mom wanted me to get baptized because she thought maybe I would die. And so I went in, didn't even really know what that was, but I got baptized. And this guy prayed for me that I would find everybody along the way would come into my life and help me with my walk. And so for 3 months, I went in the military. The first thing they asked, hey, you going to go to church? I said, yeah. I get out, go through my boot camp, get into tech school, walk into the rooms, like 300 rooms, they're all party rooms. I walk in, there's scripture all over the wall. I'm like, oh, thank you. Guy took me to church, and I really did experience an awakening at that time. And I had 3 months of complete sobriety, freedom, out there on the lawn, going to church on Wednesday nights. And this older sergeant found out where we were going, and we as recruits couldn't find out what base we were going. He said, hey, I'd be glad to show you where we're going. And can you give me a warning when I'm at about 15 minutes? So, and I said, yeah. I said, so he took me out, bought me a soda. I thought everything was like, man, this guy, he's really being nice to me. And then he goes, well, there's some gardens outside the gate. Would you like to go to them? And his tone changed. And I thought, whoa, this is kind of strange. I said, no, I'd like to go back. And he goes, well, I told you what base you're going to. And then right in that moment, I grew up around sexaholics. I'd been a sexaholic. I knew, oh my gosh. And I was so distraught. I was about ready to jump out. I said, no, I want to go back. And I said it with intensity. And I was, I was kind of a dangerous kid when we were out running in the streets. He took me back. I walked into that room and I masturbated for some reason. I have no idea. And I spent the next 4 years just hitting it hard. My sexaholism took off. My drinking took off. Drugs took off. Came back to Alaska and met my wife. We just celebrated 40. Well, I wouldn't say celebrated. We just passed 40 years. We did. 10 years into this, it's like we are best friends again. And I knew I would never be unfaithful to her. But I didn't know how progressive this disease was because it just kept requiring more and wanting more. At about 9 years, I had went and to a barbecue. I was an apprentice. We had to clean up, had a couple of drinks, drove down the road. It was 9 years into my marriage that my wife and son had already left. And a woman was hitchhiking. I picked her up and we acted out, not in a sex, not we didn't have intercourse or nothing, but we acted out. And when I dropped her off, I thought, oh my God, I would never be unfaithful to my wife. And I knew in that moment I would never talk about that again. It didn't happen. I'm going to take that to my grave and I'm just going to move on and never do that again. Well, to my surprise, I was acting out every day. I had like 3 weeks of just freedom. Like I thought, oh, this was it. I finally am free. But what I found that crossing that boundary, what came back that would eat away at me was 10 times worse than what I had had before I met her. And within weeks, I was out driving around looking for homeless women, drunk women, and eventually fell into prostitution and massage parlors. And another 10 years of doing this, I got into crossing the gender barrier, and I'd never done that. So to make a long story short, my life was a wreck. I was 52. I spent the last 20 years probably just, well, the last 10 for sure, meeting with 2 to 3 people a week, putting ads on. And I was done. I mean, I had really wrecked. So I had never brought a woman into my office, but I did that time, put an ad on. She came. I put all my emblems up so she wouldn't know we were like in the back of the building. And we got done and she looked up and it was supposed to just be touching, but it winded up unprotected sex. And she said, oh my gosh, are you with this organization? I said, yeah, I am. She goes, my husband is so and so. And I thought, oh my God, I know this guy. I represent him. And it just killed me. And as she left, she said, all right, I'll see you again sometime. When I walked back up the stairs, I was so distraught that I was going to put another ad on so I could get rid of the pain I was in. And I thought, I'm not doing it. So I took like 4 times the dose of my pain pills. I drank a bunch of alcohol, went out to my truck and smoked weed. And then I'm in a professional building where we got legislators coming by. I shut my door and locked it and just sat there looking for oblivion because I didn't want to put another ad on. And I was just so just like dozing. I didn't want to die, but man, I just didn't want to live anymore. I didn't want to do that anymore. So I called my pastor. For some reason, the thought come and I called him. I just told him everything. Now, nobody knew anything. All my friends, nobody knew that I'd go to church to set up the IT equipment. And all of a sudden, I would get struck with the compulsion to go get a prostitute. I could not go. I'd leave work early to go camping with my wife and children. I'd be less than 5 minutes, and the thought and the compulsion would come to pick up a prostitute. I couldn't make it home. I just turned and would go pick them up. He said, Dennis, I can't help you, but I know somebody that can. And I called and talked to a counselor, and he said, dude, you're a sexaholic. And I said, well, I've always known that. Every pastor I've ever talked to. I called him. He gave me the name of a guy, and the guy said, meet me at this 6:30 a.m. meeting at Dry Dock Wednesday morning. I'll see you there. And I went there. And the minute we read that white book, I thought, oh my gosh, there's other people like me. And I knew I wanted, it's just, I felt this deep, like, whoa. I was so sick back then. Like I couldn't sit next to somebody. I had to get on a corner because I had so bad a claustrophobia. I was so sick. And they said, don't leave this meeting without getting a sponsor. So I asked the guy that texted me, I said, would you sponsor me? He goes, I will. He had 2 years. He took me out to a Denny's and we spent 3 hours and he laid out everything that I'm going to do. You're going to slide out of bed every morning and do your prayers. You're going to call two guys a day and call me. You're going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You're going to get rid of all drugs, all your alcohols. You're going to quit gaming because I was gaming, at least 30 hours. So I don't know, 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening after work, 10 hours on the weekend. And he said, and so I went back, got rid of all the drugs and alcohol, threw it all in the dumpster. Took a well, close to a $1,000 video card back then. You have to be a top video game player in the world. You needed good equipment. And I didn't want to sell the computer. I put it online, and this guy from the military calls. He goes, dude, what's wrong with that card? I said, nothing. I'm quitting. And so in 1 day, I gave up everything. And he told me, he said, and then you're going to go home and, with your wife's permission, ask for if she's willing to do 90 days of abstinence. And he told me the reason you're going to do the abstinence is because I want you to start experiencing intimacy that doesn't have anything to do with sex. And I want you to find that sex is optional. So I was about day four and I was writing out my first, kind of my history for him and doing some stuff in my first step work. And all of a sudden that compulsion hit. Boom. And I had never not, could not go. And man, I started begging, go, oh, God, please. And I just did the prayer he gave me. I am powerless. I need your power. Please lend me your power just for today. And for the first time, I felt like, honestly, felt like a wind hit me. And I just felt this relief. And I just said right there to myself, I don't ever have to do this again. If that power relieved me. So every time I had any temptation or any thought, man, I would immediately pray and pray that prayer and then call somebody. If I drove by a prostitute, it would just be like overwhelming, like, oh. So I'd pray and call. Pray and call. My sponsor on day two said, I want you to start every meeting you go to, make coffee. Okay. And then, 30 days in, I started leading meetings. 90 days in, I became the literature chair. 6 months, and the next year, I became the secretary, then treasurer. I did treasurer for 2 years. I did everything that man asked me to do. He told me, don't go to the movies by yourself anymore unless you ask three people in the program. I didn't question. I just did it. He asked me about 2 years later on something. He goes, you still doing that? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, what for? I said, because you didn't tell me to stop. Like I just did what he told me. I did not want to have any control on my life at that point. I can tell you that my life completely changed as I worked those steps. Everything changed my life. I worked for the intergroup for a little bit, then went to regional. Then became a general delegate assembly for 2 years, then became the vice chair of the general delegate assembly. And I was moving into the chair position. It had been my fourth year, but my wife had health concerns, so I had to step down, which was right, as I've always trusted God's will exactly. He has taken me step by step. One of the main things, 15 minutes, thank you. Okay, I can relax now. One of the main things I think that helped me the most is that when I went into my 90 days of abstinence, and she was glad to do that. At that point, she hated me. She was going to divorce me. She said, I wish you would just go out on the highway and die and all of that. And I remember once I was back in my swing and I called my sponsor because my daughter was being mean, my wife was being mean. And I'm thinking, I just got to get out of here. I got to go. So I called my sponsor and I said, hey, man, my brain's telling me it's just time to go. My wife and daughter are being mean. And he went, ugh, oh my God, is that self-pity making you as sick as it's making me? And I went, what? And he said, I want you to go in there. And if she's willing, I want you to ask her what it's been like for her to live with you. And then I want you to say a word. And at the very end, I want you to come back and all you're allowed to say at the end is, thank you for sharing. Now, at that point, I was still so sick that 80% of everything she said was factually incorrect. Well, it wasn't 29 years I cheated on you. It was actually 30, or wasn't 30 that she says all the time. It was 29. Like that would make a difference. But I said nothing. I did what my sponsor said. But we had a good night, and everything he would tell me, I heard in the group, just lose, you know, let just trust God in this process. It's the messy metal, and if she's still raging at you, good. But we did 90 days of abstinence, and what I found at about day 80 or 70, I think it was, sex became optional for the first time in my life. I thought, whoa, I don't have to have sex. At the end of 90 days, she was scared because I was going out of town for my job, and she was like, oh, well, do you think we should have sex now? Like, somehow she needs to take care of me so that I can make it while I'm out of town. And I said, hon, come, let's go to the bed and let's kneel down at the bed. I said, if I have anything like that, I said, I can't rely on that. I need to rely on this. And I did my prayer work in front of her. I said, that's what I need when I leave town. And she was like, because I told her this one place where I'd act out. She knew I had sex with a woman out there, she said. And I told her, I said, do you know what the percentage of chances of me acting out in that place? And she said, well, how much? And I said, 100%. And she said, thank you for saying that. That's the first honest thing you've ever said to me. And what I found, though, is as we went through this, we did two 90s, a 60 and a 45, not consecutively. We were being physically intimate. But what I discovered was that if I was going to be physically intimate, that I get to ask myself four questions. Number one, do I feel like I need this? If I need it, I can't have it because that's lust. Because what I'm needing is God. I'm needing a connection to my higher power. And she for so long has been fill or attempting to fill that God void, and it doesn't work. Two, I say two and three is, am I wanting to be physically intimate to her to relieve stress or find comfort? Those have to come from my higher power. If they are, I can't have intimacy, physical intimacy with her. And the last one was the most important. Am I wanting to be physically intimate with my wife to have a connection? Because see, if I'm needing a connection, then I'm using her as my God, and I'm trying to fill my God void with her again. And that's the most deadly one. And what I found that as I practiced this, that we would during the 90 days, we go on walks and hold hands and just talk and just be. We were no business, just be with her, go to the botanical gardens or whatever we were doing. We'd just be together. And we have a really good day of intimacy. Into me, you see. Then we would come back and I would pray and ask God, am I feeling like I need this to relieve stress or find comfort? Or am I wanting a connection? And what I found is if any of those were true, but I went ahead and went with it, man, the next day we weren't fighting, but we were just separated, like a big chasm between us. She was irritated, and it was just. It just we, whatever spiritual connection we had, it broke it. A drop of lust in our intimacy will destroy my marriage. It destroys our spiritual connection, and it wasn't worth it. But if I asked if those four things, we had a good day of intimacy, and those four things weren't true, and we were physically intimate, man, the next day we're just bonded. Like we can't walk without holding hands or drive without holding hands. We can't sit next to each other on the couch. So if one of those aren't true, no matter if I think I need it, I don't want to jeopardize the spiritual connection I'm having with her. And there's times we're walking and I'll look at her, and then all of a sudden I'll look back one time and I can tell lust now. I know when I'm like at that, like I want to take that drink of her. It's this instant I recoil from it because A, I don't want to trigger the phenomenon of craving. I don't want to take a drink, and I don't want to take a drink of her. I want to be free from this lust. And I can tell you today, 100%, that it's been months since I've taken a drink, which would be either a look or some type of thought that I've entertained. And I think I'm pretty close to the 20 minutes before I go into some deeper stuff because I could talk about some of the step work, but I'll let you tell me where are we at in the time.
I think we're good. I'm enamored with your story, so keep on going.
Okay. So what I found is that lust, I couldn't afford to have even one drop of lust. And the protection, what I didn't realize with God was huge. Like any time Like if I would go and ask God, God, if I would see a temptation or a thought would come to my mind, if I went to God within 1 second, 100% of the time, God would remove that temptation. And every time he did, I felt this peace and serenity. It's like this joy come in. And my thinking would change, like, I really don't want this. But in that, and what happened is the more I would do that, the further and further those temptations were getting, and the power would, they were losing power to where, man, I just wouldn't. It's like they didn't have the power to draw me in. For a long time, I still wanted them, but I would surrender. But when I finally worked these steps and connected to the power, I didn't want it. If I see something that was like, whoa, I would recoil from it, not because I'm going to lose my sobriety, but because I just don't want it. But if I got back into self, I get back into some disturbance, I could still re I would still surrender the temptation, but now I'm wanting the temptation. And we never know the power of a temptation until we try to resist it. And if I resist, it persists. I have to completely let go. I had a sponsee yesterday tell me, he's in his fourth step, goes, Dennis, man, I prayed and it just went away. He goes, and I don't know how that happened. And I said, well, the reason you're wanting to know is because that way you can figure it out, then you can control it. You're wanting to control it. And I said, this whole program is, I said, you stepped into the sunlight of the spirit in that moment. That's where we live, where we don't need to know. I don't want to have any control. I let go completely. I open up and just say, call upon the power, and the power will always remove it. I said, but in that moment of a temptation, if I pause, then now I'm fighting it. And 100%, usually, I'm going to take that drink. And if I take that drink, that poison goes down into my body. And once that poison's gone into my body and I start feeling the effects of it, I don't care how much I've prayed, God has never removed the poison that I've drank. It's like mixing a big old drink of Drano and drinking it down and then saying, oh God, please help me. He's like, dude, you better get to the emergency room. So he's never removed the effects of the drink I've taken. And as soon as I take a drink, man, those temptations get rolling in one after another. Obsession of the mind starts hitting and the power of them starts growing. And so I have learned that I am powerless over the insanity of the first drink. But what I've learned now is the reason I work 10, 11, and 12 so much each day is because the 911 is the thought that comes to mind. I used to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Well, if I'm watching for resentment, I'm already so tangled up in it. But now I watch for the thought that comes in, a self-pity thought, a resentment thought, I'm hurt thought. I can't. And so that's the 911. That's when I go to God now and ask him to remove the thought long before it ever gets to. If I'm tempted now, then I've already blown past something that is, and sometimes like I'll be, whoa, I feel a temptation. I'm like, God, what's going on? Well, you've got this little dinky resentment towards your wife. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so little. But see, that's the deal. I can't even have one drop of resentment. Any resentment, any disturbance. It says on page 66 that when I'm harboring such feelings, which are resentments, I'm shut off from the sunlight of the spirit and the insanity of lust returns and I drink again. Well, I don't believe that the resentment disconnected me from my higher power. It shut me off from the sunlight. I think I'm already shut off from the sunlight of the spirit, and that's the result of it. Then I'm going to go back into the darkness, back into the insanity and fear. I'm going to go back into the, want and lust. So I have only 1 second if I start to get into a resentment, if I start getting into some fear. And those inventories of the fourth step are beautiful, and they're all wrapped up together, 4 through 9 in step 10. And I find that step 10 works most times, but sometimes, man, I let something in. It's kind of like when it says when these crop up, it's like a little leaf busting through the dirt. It's at its weakest point. But instead of surrendering it, I give it some Miracle-Gro water and analyze it and think about it, and it grows some roots. And sometimes a 10-step doesn't work. I made the calls. I done asked God to remove it, made amends quickly if I've harmed anybody, and resolutely turned my thoughts. I got to go back and actually get the inventory tools and do some inventory, and those work. And if I've taken a drink, then I get to suffer until that comes out. So I don't want to use up all the time here. Thank you very much for inviting me. There's a whole bunch more, but I think that hopefully shared with you a little bit about my experience that I've had. That's all.
Thank you, Dennis. I really appreciate your story. I had listened to you before, but I didn't realize how deep your story went. Actually, I had to be honest, you had said something early and you said, well, I would never cheat on my wife. And when you said that, I kind of immediately went, oh, he's one of those guys. I'm sorry. And what I mean is, when somebody says that to me, they don't have yet after it, then I know that they're not, I don't think they're dealing reality. So when you said that, it told me you were still in the addiction when you said
Oh.
that to yourself. And I that was good to hear. Thank you for that. So I guess, you talked a lot about when you came into the program, you were acting out left and right, and things just you would act out, and you felt so bad about acting out, you'd act out again. You'd make these contacts, and we have a lot of guys in the program who come in and they bounce around in sobriety. They don't hold on to sobriety for long, and the back and forth. And what do you say? What is the biggest challenge for a newcomer in staying sober?
Well, I guess it depends on whether they, how long they've been into their illness and how much hell it's brought them through. The gift of desperation is everything. Some guys are coming in to save their marriage, or some guys are coming in, the young guys that come in. Truthfully, my heart, where I left off 10 years ago was hell. I mean, it was absolute hell. And I know the man of 30. I know I've seen guys that's been in for 2 years sober, and when they go back, they never go back to where they left off. They slide forward into other stuff. I don't know where I would slide forward to, but it doesn't matter. I don't never want to go back to where I was at. I mean, just dead inside, needing to medicate constantly. The pain was her. It was a burning lust. It never stopped. I mean, I maybe got a little bit of relief. So, two things. I think if somebody came in and just was at a point in their life, and I don't know if it's a military or I was just so dang beat up, if they were willing to do everything their sponsor said, it's not an a la carte system, everything without questioning, I think most would have a good shot at getting sobriety right off. But remember, the illness isn't the lust. It's the self's will. It's the self. It's the ego. A lot of people come in and they want to do it their way. They want to kind of have some control on it. I didn't have any. I let go of everything. I didn't like what my sponsor would tell me sometimes, but I never didn't do it. I don't, I'm just, I think I'm lucky that I came in so defeated that I was willing to, do whatever he said. So,
So let me ask you, in your role as a sponsor, how do you handle those guys that, I mean, is that what you say? You do everything I say or find another sponsor, or do you work with them?
oh, I work with them because God's always reminding me, hey, Dennis, I'm very patient with you. Okay, God, I hear you. And he is. And what I've learned about sponsoring is that I can't save anybody. I have no power. I am also an Al-Anon as well because, but I really know that and I think every sponsor has to go through the process of working harder than their sponsees or their sponsee that's not working it until they get burned out, trying to save them, trying to encourage them, giving them call, trying to keep them on track. It doesn't work. So, if a sponsee is falling away, I will attempt to talk with them, but I let them go. I
Yeah.
can't make them do it or give them an incentive. I think in the big book it says, pain is the great persuader, and that's what they need sometimes.
Yeah, that's always a struggle with me when with a sponsee, and how you try not to, you don't want to carry him, you're not going to save him, and all you can do is share your experience, strength, and hope, and hope that they follow along. I agree with that. You had said something early on, and I just want a question, two-part question. One is, do you think this addiction is a disease or a moral failing?
Well, I've done some thoughts about that because the book says it's an illness, as we, but to me, and I think it would be good to look at the difference between those, what an illness and a disease. I think the disease in part, and I don't know the answer, but I'm going to tell you what the study and I've done, what I believe. I think the disease part is the phenomenon of craving. I think that's the disease. I think the illness, the ism, internal spiritual malady, the I self me is the self that's trying to run the show, the fallen nature, whatever you want to call it. I think that's the illness. And that illness for me is in rebellion against the power, against my higher power. And it's in rebellion against everybody. And I think that's my illness, is my self's will. So whether it's an illness or disease, whatever you call it, I don't know. All I know that it has absolute power over me, and I can do nothing to stop it except, and step. Okay, hang on this thing. Except to just let go. I mean, I have to not try to fight this or control it. But yeah, I was going to read one thing here real quick to you. Do you have another question? Because I've wondered that myself, and boy, I would love to hear other people's ideas. But here's what a sort of a thing. Patients suffer illnesses. Doctors diagnose and treat diseases. Illnesses are experiences and discontinuities in the state of being and perceived role performances. Diseases in the scientific paradigm of modern medicine are abnormalities in the function and or structure of the body, organs, or systems. So I don't know, but I think the big book, it says both, but I look at it as an illness of the mind. That's what I think it is. I think sexaholism is an illness of my mind.
I really like the way you link that to the phenomenon of craving. And you mentioned that before, and that's one of the things I always write down here that I like to talk about is the phenomenon of craving. And and that's the doctor's opinion. And
Yes,
it's
it is.
in the and it says, and I really like this part, and maybe you can comment on it too, as part of this illness and disease. These men were not drinking to escape. I mean, that problem may be what got them to drink. But once they started drinking, they were no longer drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome craving beyond their mental control.
Yes. Boy, if that's one thing that, getting ready for this step thing, that God's always prompted me to do something like this. And I just never, I always say, no, I'm going to just rely on what God does. But here's the deal. The insanity is the insanity of the first drink. There's like in the first, well, it's 51 pages when if you count the 8 pages of the doctor's opinion and 43 pages of step one of the big book, 1 through 43, it's like 17 places where it says, the first drink, they start drinking. They don't really talk about what happens too much after you drink, because we all know acting out's the last thing we're going to do. Whether we act out a month, a week, 5 days, 6 hours, it doesn't matter. The whole program is based on the first drink. And I'll give you an example for me. There's a woman across the street, very, I don't really want to give a description, but for some reason, she every morning she gets dressed and she has her blinds up, and in Alaska it's dark a lot. 6:10 every morning, there she is. And I'm not going to give you my address where I live. And there she is. And my counselor said one time, well, why don't you just report it? And I said, because she's not the problem. Because otherwise, there's going to be other things. And so I get to work my program around that. But here's what to me is a phenomenon creating. If for some reason I'm disturbed about something, the thought will come to my mind, oh my God, it's about that time. And I'll either recoil from it and go, no, God, hey God, he's back, you know. Or I'll pause in that moment. And if I take one step toward those blinds, I've taken a drink. I've taken an action. If I entertain what that may look like in my mind, I've taken a drink. Now, if I go all the way over to the blinds and I lift those blinds, even if she's not there, I'm telling you, I'm in like at least 3 days of going to those blinds, or a week until, or at least praying constantly until that poison's out of my body. It's just like it's like this obsession now that I just like, oh my gosh, why did I take that drink? But after 2 or 3 days of every time the thought comes, all of a sudden I feel it lift out of my body and I'm free from it. And I say, oh God, please, Dennis, don't take another drink. But you're right. Once I take the drink, the phenom I'm no longer drinking to escape. I'm drinking to overcome a craving beyond my mental control. And I encourage my sponsees, look what you feel like before when you're not drinking. And I want you to start really paying attention. Ask God to show you, make you aware of what it's when the thought comes in and what it's like after you take that drink. And I'm not talking shame. You know, if you have shame, there's an indication you think you should be able to not do it. That's no shame. And lust is neither good or bad, right or wrong. It's just harmful to us. And I can't ingest any of that poison into my body. So, and I'll save a story for my brother about my brother's house where I actually took another drink and I didn't know what happened. I wasn't even thinking about it. I just won't. And anyway, so yeah, there's for me, and the last thing I'll say is like we could be having a birthday party, everybody's happy, and we'll go to the store and grab this. I go to the store, I walk in and take a drink, come home, and everybody's fighting. It's like I bring evil upon my home or something. I don't know what it is, but when I drink, not only am I being tormented, but my family is as well. I don't know how else to say it. And we're all separated. So pass.
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you. So one of the things I've always I know for me in the program, you know, there's certain words that we see a lot, and I always think, yeah, I know what that is, and I go on and I read the next sentence, but I never stop, and I don't really understand that word, and I still don't know that I understand them to their fullest, but I do try to consider their full ramifications. And so I'm going to ask you a couple of those, and you'll know them for sure. They're normal, the big words in our program. What is lust? The word
Well, I've
lust. What is lust?
wanting anything that God doesn't have for me in the moment. That's lust. Because it really is sexual lust. And then when the progressive victory over lust now becomes, am I using shows to medicate? Am I using food to medicate? It's just more lust. For me, very simply, lust is when I'm connected to the power, I have like a reservoir and it's filled with living water. I feel comforted, filled up, at peace and serenity. But when I step out into the darkness again, where the self is back, the insanity is going, the fears, the selfishness, the anger, I'm disconnected from that power. And anytime I'm disconnected from the power, there's like a God void in me. And I'm going to do whatever I have to do to try. And that's what the self does. It's self-seeking. You know what I call self-seeking? Anytime it's self-seeking is to fill that God void. It can do it with people. It can do it, you know. I may need to seek affirmation, confirmation, praise. It wants to be exalted. The self does. But I'm trying to, there's an emptiness in me. And if I leave that emptiness there long enough, I'm going to need go back to my drug, which is sexual lust. And I don't know about you, but man, it for me does not fulfill. It actually leaves me more empty. It never will. The only thing that can fill that is that reservoir is when I connect to the power. And not only am I filled, but it's flowing over.
Sorry, my headphones kind of died on me there. and then
Okay,
charge them
no
on back.
problem.
So I'm switching back here. But a lot of times talking to a newcomer or to someone facing a dilemma, and a lot of times, right, they're not facing a dilemma about acting out. They're facing a dilemma in life
Yeah.
because whatever's going to happen is not what they want to have happen,
Yeah.
And I think, well, that's another one of the words, but I don't want to get to it now. But really, when it comes down to it, when you're facing one of those things, and you mentioned it too, this turning over control. The other term is powerlessness.
Yeah.
How do you look at powerlessness? Or how do you define it?
Well, if a sponsee calls and says, "Hey, I'm struggling." I said, "Well, you're struggling because you're not powerless. Because you're not powerless. Any attempt on me to try and figure out this program, to try to control it, to try to control and manage lust, anything on my part that I'm doing what's considered God's job, then I'm not powerless. I'm trying to fill the God void. I'm trying to, when I'm trying to control and manage outcomes, I'm in my illness, I'm in my disease, I'm in my fear trying to control. The only place I can find my higher power is in the present moment. If I get into fear, I get dragged off into the future trying to control and manage this, or I'm in the bad past with resentments, or the most deadly for me is self-pity. It is just deadly for me because then I don't care. F it. And so I have to stay in the present moment. Yeah, so I lost my train of thought there for a second. What was the word? Tell me again.
Powerlessness.
Powerlessness. Yeah, so connected to the power, I have to be powerless, which means I used to like tell God, "Oh God, take this." And he wouldn't, and I'd look and my fingers were still sort of wrapped. Okay, so I opened my hands all the way. God, please take this. And he wouldn't. And I'd notice there'd be a little pinky still holding on to it. Powerless is when I'm truly ready to let go of it. And I don't know, I talk to a sponsee sometimes. There's some grieving that has to happen, A, to be let go of your lust. And what's kept, it's been comforting you your whole life. And now you're going to let go of it. And so there is a grieving process about it. And it's even more so when we start, Bill says, I think on page 12, simple but not easy, a price has to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. The third step doesn't say, God, I offer my lust. Relieve me of the bondage of lust. It says, relieve me of the bondage of self. After page 43, it doesn't talk about alcohol. It only talks about the illness, and the illness is the self. The self's will. So, man, powerless is just it's something that I think only God can give us, or your higher power can give you. Like it says, we have to be rid of it or it kills us. God makes that possible. So when I get up in the morning, 10 years into this, my prayer isn't God, I offer. I beg God for another day. I say, God, thank you for letting me wake up sober. I don't take that for granted. And I beg you, please remove this self's will out of me. 11th step, it says, show me my next steps. And I add thoughts, show me my next steps and thoughts. Provide what I need for such problems, especially removing any self's will. I need self out of there. And the only way for me to do that is God's not going to override my, at least in my case, I don't know, but he won't override my free will. And there's a story about God asked the man, give me the keys to your heart. That means all of them. Like, I'm not going to hold back. Well, you take care of this, Lord. I got this. He handed God the keys and he said, God said, are these all of them? And he goes, yes, Lord, all but a couple. You need not worry about those. God handed him back the keys and he says, if you don't trust me with all, then you don't trust me at all. And that's the whole story of the bridge and stepping to shore and the we agnostics. Why am I stuck on shore? Why am I stuck on the bridge right now? Trying to medicate with binge watching something on a show because I'm afraid to step to shore because I don't know, or I'm not willing to let go of something, a resentment, or so when the self is deflated, Man, life is happy, joyous, and free. Pass.
Yeah, the faith that step three, I mean, that step three calls us to have. The other word, another big word, is surrender. How do
Yeah.
you define, or how do you experience surrender in your life?
Well, I'll just say this. The 11th step at the very bottom, when it gets into, it says, when doubtful, let me go there real quick at page 87 if you want to go along, or 85. Yeah. When it says, here we ask. We ask means the prayers. It's all through the 10th and 11th step. For inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision, we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. But we're often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions. And nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes. So after we've tried it for a while, gradually, and as time passes, we're going to make mistakes. This is the spiritual gym. When we hit step 11, now we've already surrendered. Step three, when we, on page 62 at the bottom, it says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Next, hereafter in this drama life, God is going to be my director. There's the third step. Now, that third step is useless without 4 through 9. It's just a decision. But I'm surrendering, and a lot of the surrendering that's going to happen is when I get into that fourth step and I write, because it's a date with God, and all that writing, I can't see it yet. But when I get in that fifth step and we go through it, I get to see self for the first time and how deadly and destructive it is. And once I can see that, I don't want no more self. I'm like, yes, Lord. So surrender is a daily thing. Like, I don't know how long, I don't know if it's been years since I haven't woke up and slid out of bed to my knees. Thank God. Did my God, I'm powerless. I need your power. Please lend me your power. Just do my third step prayer. I do several other prayers. It doesn't matter. I memorized them out of ego, but now they're just like precious to me. I thought, oh, I'm doing all these prayers. God has used a lot of my ego to get what I needed inside, but now they're just like so much comfort for me. I don't think I can do, and that's what sometimes I catch sponsees, like they just want to do more. Well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do? You need to surrender. I can't do enough to control God. Like, okay, God, I'm not gonna watch any shows. I'm gonna just be like, just with you, man, there's no connection for some reason. I can't do anything, because once I can figure out what I need to do, then I can control God. It doesn't work like that. So for me, surrender is, it's not about striving, it's about yielding. Just letting go. Just saying, okay, God, I can't even love you right. I can't connect to you the way I want. You have to do this. And like it says in the 10th step, it happens automatically. It just comes. We're not swearing off. It's just part of, we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Like that guy said to me, he just took it away and I don't know how he did it. Keep doing that. And, we don't want to know. We just want to live in this place of absolute surrender, letting go.
Yeah.
Guess that's the best thing I would say for surrender.
Yeah. And the last big word, that at least the ones that I picked out, the last big word is acceptance.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that one. Because we all know 417, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. Early in recovery, I think, okay, well, I'm just going to be in acceptance today. Never worked. It just never worked. I couldn't be in acceptance. But what happened is when I finally got into 4 through 9 and I'm really living in the spirit. When I, you know, I connect in and out of the power, like Bill said, I needed and wanted God and he came, but soon his presence was blotted out by worldly clamors. most within myself. So when I'm connected to the power, I have acceptance. I have peace. I have serenity. I can't manufacture that. I just is. When I'm connected to power, I never knew what right size. Everybody goes, oh, you feel right size. It wasn't until I connected the power. Oh, I'm not above anybody and I'm not below anybody. There's no more comparison needed. I just am. So I want to live there. So for me, acceptance isn't something that I can manufacture. It's, today we went with my daughter and she's went into, I drove her over to the hospital to have like sonogram stuff done. And my wife was there and her and there were clicking. And I got to see the ultrasound last time. And they got up to go and they go, is your dad coming? She goes, no, just stay here. Boy, the thought that came to my mind is I wanted to be sad. I wanted to be hurt. I drove you over here. I want to be a part of this. And I thought, now, wait a minute, Dennis. You're trusting. You can set your calendar for today, but God sets whatever happens, that's God's will. And it was exactly His will that I set out. And so within seconds, I was free. Now, if I'd have stayed in that little self-pity, man, I'd be in big trouble. And I had peace because I thought, wait a minute. So I think acceptance is accepting that whatever God has for me in this moment, whether it's a delayed plane, I know He's got somebody that's going to put in my path. And I can't tell you, we don't have time here, how many people He's put in my path. It's just been crazy. I sat next to a guy and we spill out for 3 hours about recovery because he's starting a 12-step group in his church. And all the things that had to happen to get on that other plane, it's just insane. So I always know when a door closes, God's got something that He's going to use me. And the whole purpose of this program, I think the truly acceptance and surrender together go, I wake up, I'm just a channel of His peace today. I don't need to know what I'm supposed to say. I especially use that when working with sponsees. I let God pour through because I have nothing for them. If it's me, it's ego. And I'll hurt them. I'll try to control them. But if it's just God pouring through, then it's what they need. And I don't know what they need. Every sponsee is different. Every fifth step is different. Man, when I used to look at a fifth step, I'm like, well, you didn't really do it like I did it. But then I have this awakening as we do it the way they did it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, because that guy was going to God to date with God. God, I'm going to just surrender and let you write this. And he wrote it. And then when we went to it together, I got like a front row seat going, oh my gosh, this is so powerful. So I have learned that just to be a channel of God's peace. That's my, anyways, that's what I got.
Good stuff. Thank you. Yeah, it's as you went through each one of the words, in my mind, the best way I can describe it, and it was in today's reading, I think, in the real connection, and in some other readings this morning, is that the pilot light for all of these things is the selfish, self-centered fears that we carry with us. When we can recognize and not let that pilot light explode into, the flames, then that's the surrendering of our powerlessness, accepting the way things are, and recognizing and seeing lust. Awareness of it is so important. All right, I have one question that came in on the chat, and then I'm going to open it up to, and if you guys have anything you want, please raise your hand. Oh, I just want to let you know too that, and I'm sorry I didn't have it started at the very beginning, but I left my computer at my son's house in New Jersey, 6 hours away. So when I logged on today, I used my wife's computer, thinking I was logging on as I always do. And when I went set up to hit record, it says, oh, you have to be the host. And then I had to remember how to get to be the host. And so I missed the first couple of minutes. So this is being recorded. So if you don't want your voice on a recording, send a chat or just listen to the other comments. But I have one here. Please ask Dennis how Dennis deals with hobbies or other interests that bring joy. At what point does it become dangerous or something he's lusting after? So I
That's
guess it's like, how much can you enjoy something up to the point that it becomes lusting?
yeah, and like I have a sponsor right now, he loves kayaking and mountain biking and all of that stuff. And so I like to One of the biggest things when bringing a sponsee into, and only God can awaken them. I can't. I can help, try to help, but God has to awaken them. Am I doing, like, we'll just take, I just did a guy and he said, "Oh, I just love cookies." And I said, "Oh." I said, "Well, are you medicating with him?" He goes, "Oh, no." And I said, "Well, do you ever eat cookies to comfort yourself?" He goes, "Well, yeah." I said, "Okay." So the question is a cookie is fine. Mountain biking is great. Kayaking is good. But if I'm using any of those hobbies to fill my God void, then it's not healthy. And we start looking at the more longer we're in program and the longer we live in the light and we live in the connected to the power, the more we start to see if we're medicating or if I'm trying to use something to fill my God void. My wife, binge watching some shows, food, anything I can use, anything. And we start to become awakened to what am I using to medicate so that I'm okay? If we're connected to the power, then all those things are beautiful. They're gifts that God gives us. If I'm connected to the power, being physically intimate with my wife is a beautiful gift for us. If I'm connected to the power, a cookie is great. But if I'm not connected to the power, and I know when I'm doing it, I know when I'm, I need to stop and get connected to the power. That's most important because I can't live my life. If I'm going to live my life medicating, it doesn't matter if, like, well, I'm not medicating on lust. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm still missing out on this beautiful gift that recovery brings into my life. And I don't do it perfectly. There's two states of being, self-centered fear or God-centered love. And I believe it's like a light switch. There's no degrees. Because if I'm in self-centered fear at some point, I think, well, if I take over 1% of the control, I've got 100 again. So I think I'm in either one or the other. And God's a perfect gentleman. He will never try to override the self's will, but the self's will constantly try to override God. And just in rebellion, it does everything it can to try to pull me into out of the thing. And but the longer I live in the light, I don't have any power, but the more powerful that becomes. So, yeah, I think that's it.
Dennis. Anybody have any questions, raise your hand. I'll let you go. I'll let you unmute yourself and start asking. Because if not, I'm going to keep going on, and you guys don't want to have to listen to that.
I'm never bashful about asking a question, Fred. This is Tony, and I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Tony.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks for being with us. Really appreciate it. Do you see surrender as a state of mind, an attitude, or are there also actions that you could take in the spirit of surrender?
Well, I'll just go with the actions first. If I know I'm medicating with, say, a show, I can just shut it off and go get connected back with God. And it's pretty immediate. But it all de always depends on my motive of why I'm doing it. But I think surrender, I don't know about a state of mind like the other day I was meditating and I thought, the only thing that keeps me disconnected from God is believing that I'm disconnected from God. Whether that's true or not, when I recognize that, does God ever disconnect from me? No, never. He's always there with me. He never leaves me. And he's always just waiting. Like I tell my sponsees this, I'll say it about me. Like God loves me and loves you so much that he waits for the moment that we'll stop what we're doing and just go be with him. I can imagine he's just giddy. He's just so like joy, like You are his, and I am his greatest joy. And the greatest gift I get from this program is him. Know, when I first came in the end of the third set prayer, it says, "Take away my difficulty so that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life." When I came in, all I needed was, I get him in those orders, what I see. All I needed was his power. Oh, I'm tempted again. Oh, okay, thanks, God. Catch you on the flip side, But then we start going back and going back, and we start experiencing his love. I'm like, whoa, I like this a lot. And then we start living in the sunlight. We start experiencing his way of life, which means helping his children and being of service and connecting with others. And for the first time in my life, experiencing intimacy. So, yeah. Stop there.
Anybody else got a question?
All right.
I have a question. This is Tim J. Dennis, you were saying something probably midway in your share where you said that if you need those four things, you know you're in trouble. Maybe that wasn't exact words, but what were those four things?
This is if I'm if me and my wife, first off, if we're going to be physically intimate, we have to have a real day of intimacy. Like we've really had a wonderful day. And so the four things are, if we're going to be physically intimate, do I feel like I need it? Am I wanting this to relieve stress or find comfort? That's two and three. And number four is, am I wanting to be physically intimate with my wife to have a connection? Because early on, I would be on the couch all sulky, wanting to have get physically intimate, and she'd walk by and she'd go, "Dude, I'm not your higher power." And now this is the truth. I mean, honestly, I hope to God she never gives herself away to me to take care of me.
Amen.
That is so, yeah, I'm with you, brother. That is so harmful to her. That is so harmful to me. I hope she never lets that illness, whatever she would ever give in to that, like, because A, she's playing God. Oh, we got to take care of him. No, please, God, no. If I'm going to suffer, let me go out and work my program around that. If they're, if we're having a, there's been times we've been out, we're having this wonderful time, and she's being flirty. She's doing stuff that's like, oh, she wants to be physically intimate. We get home, she's tired. I'm like, oh, okay. Because sex is truly optional. And I don't want us to, if I want it and I'm really like excited about it, I don't want her to enter into that unless she wants that too. Because it truly, unless this isn't something that I somehow obtained. This is something that God gives me out of a result of being connected to him. Sex becomes optional. Now, if I'm on the bottle, taking little drinks here and there, that's called acting in, I'm gonna always need it and always want it. I'm gonna always try and I don't ever want to hurt her like that again. And the beautiful part is when sex is completely optional and we are truly connected and living in the light and we are enjoying intimacy. She wants to be physically intimate. She looks forward to it. And so do I. And from day one, my sponsor says no more than once a week. Sometimes we'll go 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and sometimes we'll go once a week, but never more than that. He never told me not to. In fact, I got a new sponsor, so I just always do what he said. But I mean, if she came and she wanted to, yeah. And as long as I was feeling, I don't. It's not to the point where I feel like I'm going to be in danger because I'd already have to be kind of sick, needing it. So it's, do I need this? If I need it, I need God, not her. Am I wanting this to relieve stress and find comfort? I need to find that in God. Am I wanting it to have a connection with her? Man, I don't want to be having sex with her unless we already have a connection. It's just too, this disease and this illness is so deadly. One drop of lust will burn my marriage to the ground. Or if she's, I hate to say it, sick enough to stick around, She's just going to have to suffer the rest of her life because really what she is my prostitute. I really don't care about her. I just need her body. That's it. Take care of me. And that's nobody deserves to be treated like that. But listen, if I stop working my program and let up on it, that'll be me. The only reason I get what I get out of this program is because I work it every day. I'm lucky enough to be retired. Any after 1 p.m. every day, no recovery. I don't answer my call. It's all with her. And we both do, she does has sponsees. We do our do meetings in the morning, 6:30 a.m. to about 7:38. Work with a sponsee or two, usually two, sometimes three. I don't like to do three. It's kind of wears me out. But then 10:15 to 11 is our time to have coffee and play a game. She goes in, she usually does a noon to one, but after one, and I have lunch made for her every day. Not because I trying to get owe her for 29 years of unfaithfulness to her, because I just bring a lot of joy out of, man, I want to love that woman well. Remember Mike C said, and I'll end here. Mike C said he's 25 years. He goes, I just love her. He said that at the Nashville tournament or conference. I just love her. And when he said that, I thought, well, that's nice, but I didn't understand it. I'm starting to understand what he's talking about. And I get 15 more years if I make it that far to understand what he's really talking about. Every year that goes by, it's better. At 8 years, it wasn't as good as it is at 10 years. At 5 years, there's no, I mean, there's no comparison. I still was learning how to just live with God on a daily basis. I surrendered.
Yeah, I'm glad, and I'll let Roger do the next question, but I'm glad you clarified that on the fourth one, the connection, seeking a connection. If I'm seeking a connection, that's probably not the right reason to be intimate, but I need to already be connected. And that's so important, that whole term connection. And I'm not going to go there. I wanted to go there, but we ran out of time, so we won't go there. Now we'll go with Roger.
Let me say one thing real quick about that. I have sponsees in Middle East countries. And some of their culture is that if a man demands sex, that his wife has to give it to him. And I work with sponsees and I say, no, if you want to work with me, that doesn't happen no more. And I can't tell you how happy those wives are when they get to have some decision in that. And because in some cases, it's almost like rape. And so I have let guys go because, hey, I can't work with you. Because the purpose of this program is to not cause any harm. And I don't want to have an opinion or judge your culture. But we're talking about sexaholism here, and it is deadly and it will harm people. And I can't be a part of somebody that's harming somebody else. If you want to be free, because it's just lust, then we'll work together. But you're going to have to prayerfully consider following this suggestion. Otherwise, I can't be around it because I can't pass.
Thanks, Dennis. Roger.
Yeah, Dennis, I really appreciated your definition or your explanation of the difference between, well, I'm going to ask you to explain a little more the difference between physical intimacy and sexual intimacy. I've been blessed where I've come to realize that the moments of, I don't know about you guys, but my moments of pleasure don't last that long. And there's a difference between those moments of pleasure and the mental foreplay that I used to have. I mean, that was crazy crap. And the intimacy that I have with my wife, the physical intimacy, non-sexual intimacy, is so more grat much more gratifying. And I inferred that from you, but maybe you can explain how you differentiate physical intimacy from the sexual intimacy, Dennis.
When you say physical, it's just intimacy into me, you see. I because I never had it, I didn't know. So the physical intimacy, which is, and when I'm saying physical intimacy, I mean the sexual intimacy versus the intimacy of her heart, to connect with her heart and just be with her on a heart level where we're having fun together, we're enjoying each other. That's what I was talking about. So, trying to think here. I had something in my head and it just left me. But I'll give you an example. Like one of the things I did when, I don't know, 5 years ago when I retired is I would get up in the morning and I would pick up trash. And I have a little picker and I would go out because as soon as spring comes, all the snow melts and there's a ton of trash. So I go out and I just pick up trash every day our neighborhood got cleaned. Then it went out by the streets and the roads and then out by the bike trails. And I was, we were picking up trash. So on the second or third year, my wife goes, "Well, I want to go with you." So I got her a picker. Well, we went out picking, and I was like 20 feet in front of her, just filling my bag. Look back, I said, "Well, what's the matter?" Because she kept going slower and slower. My counselor goes, "Dennis, it's not about picking up the trash, it's about the intimacy of being with her." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So then, she's picking up little things. So I stayed there. We go on what's called Godspeed. 3 miles an hour. I gotta slow down. When I'm driving, I drive slow because she's scared. I know we're safe, but I drive slow. So I drive slow, and I consider her. I'm being considerate. So we start picking up trash and just, going. Well, we started talking the whole time. And I'm like, something. So I was like, "Oh, wait a minute. I kind of like this." And I started building that intimacy with her, and started learning what intimacy was. And that's being with her, listening to her, loving her. And I got this great idea the other day that, because I like to write, and I said, "How can I best love my wife?" It's called the three wells. How can I best love my wife well? Well, to love her when she's not well. And I told her about that, and she didn't like it. And so I told her about that, and that didn't go well. But yeah, I think intimacy is truly about slowing down and going to Godspeed. And then I start seeing the mannerisms in her face. I start seeing who she is. She was setting up for Christmas a couple years ago, and I didn't say anything. And I'm watching how she's putting stuff up, and she's humming. She hasn't hummed for years. And I realized that's her, how she's doing it. That's her right there. Where before I have an opinion, how everything has to be and try and control it. No, don't put it over there. And I just let her do it however she wants. So for me, the intimacy is she gets to be who she is. And it reminds me of the story of about 419 or 418 in the big book, where he just loved Max, her gaiety, this young woman. And the more he focused on her defects or her shortcomings, the more she wilted. Man, that's me and my sexaholism. My wife had wilted to the point of death almost. Now in recover, the more I just let her be who she is, I start seeing who she is, and it's beautiful. I mean, I was never physically abusive to her ever, but boy, was I absent and not present, critical. Just horrible. And yeah, anyways, but the sexual intimacy is born out of the intimacy of us being together. That's just a gift that we get to experience together and enjoy. Last thing I'll say is, when my sponsees first come in, I like to ask them, I say, "Well, do you fantasize when you're having sex with your wife?" Sometimes. Okay. If there's even a drop of resentment, I can't be with her spiritually connected. We can just be physical. And while, in our illness, it may serve a purpose of some sort, it really didn't. It was just so harmful. And then I like to ask him also, "Do you have fantasies about your wife dying?" And I haven't met one yet that hasn't, "Well, if she just died, not even about the sex, it's just how much nicer life would be." And I can't imagine, I had those fantasies. I can't imagine without being with her now. Where before, that's all, might think my life would be. And it's so the intimacy is I really truly have grown to where, this woman hated me. I mean, for years on Valentine's Day, I'd give her flowers and wouldn't say a word. They'd just be in the trash. We didn't celebrate our anniversary. If I wanted to get her flowers, always like 2 or 3 days before, and then she could enjoy them. But when the Valentine's Day came or anniversary came, If it landed on a Friday and I'd say, or Valentine's Day lands on Thursday, and you ask anybody else, hey, guess what February 14th is? They go, Valentine's Day. I said, no, it's Thursday. That's what we do. Like, it's just another day. But I saw this on my computer last night or the other night, and it says, now that may not seem like much, but that's somebody whose heart has been I was unfaithful for 29 years, and she knows about all the prostitutes and all the people that she's given herself to me again. And man, I don't take that lightly. I never want to hurt that woman again. And how I'll hurt her? One drop of lust. Even if she doesn't know, one drop of lust will steal our intimacy. I can't have both. Remember one day she was out in the backyard gardening and I was in the front yard, and that woman was out there washing her vehicle. I call her my, what does Roy call him? His Queen of Azura. She's terrible. She's out there washing her truck, and I saw her, and I said to myself, Dennis, you can't have both. You can't have her and your wife. Those days are long gone. So even in my mind, pass.
Hey
Hey, Dennis.
Dennis.
Question. Yeah. Hey, Jim.
Dennis, this is Jim C. I just wanted to thank you for giving us a whole new meaning and definition of trash talk.
Yeah, that's great. I just love that. I'm going to tell my wife that. She'll love that. We even got a little wagon now because one, we started in March and we just pick up, we'd each have bags and we pick them up. By June, because we weighed them, let's just weigh them right before we throw them in our trash. The fire departments let them put them in their dumpster because they know we're picking up trash. I know this sounds impossible. Little bottle caps and little things and some metal plates or whatever. 650 pounds in 3 months. We couldn't believe it. Just a little bit of trash every day. Pass. Trash talk. I love that. That's great, Jim.
Excellent, guys. Excellent. All
Okay.
right. Hey, it's 8:30, and I said we'd end at 8:30. Doesn't mean we're going to close up here. We're just going to close the meeting. If you guys want to stay on and talk afterwards, we can. Any announcements? The only announcement we have is there is a retreat May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. I hope a lot of you guys are already signed up for it. If not, sorry, it's already too late. Right, Victor? Locked up. Anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. This is an anonymous program. Please keep the name, address, and phone number of anyone you meet or learn about in SA to yourself. And remember what we say here, let it stay here. Hear, hear. Remember that we never identify ourselves with SA in the press, radio, TV, films, or on the internet, and neither does anyone speak for SA. We'll close with the third step prayer, and then I'll ask. Let's get Bill H to take us out with the 1, 2, 3. But first, let's do the third step prayer, please. If you join me, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Amen.
Bill, unmute yourself and take us out.
My head just went totally blank, Fred. What is it you want me to do?
Up to three. Count to three.
One, two, three.
Keep coming
You
back.
came back.
It works
to work.
It also
Don't
works.
work is because you're worth it.
And love, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank
Thank
you,
you,
everybody.
thanks.
God bless you
Thank
all.
you, guys.